Let's face it, people have different sleep needs. While you love your partner, sleeping next to them might not always be the most comfortable. Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs, so you can choose what's right for each of you whenever you like. Maybe you prefer a firmer mattress and your partner needs something softer. Because of the individualized comfort that you get from Sleep Number Smart Beds, you and your partner will sleep better together. All Sleep Number Smart Beds feature cooling, pressure-relieving comfort layers for soothing sleep throughout the night. And their temperature balancing bedding is designed to move heat and moisture away when you're hot. When you're cool, they hold their energy to help warm you. The smart beds even automatically respond and adjust to your movements, so you sleep comfortably all night long. JD Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For JD Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com. /awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
There's so much hype around Glossier. Like, what makes you sort of a believer in the brand?
Well, the products are so pretty and they really work and they make me feel like pretty and nice and confident, and it's all like cruelty free and whatnot, and I really appreciate that. And it's like affordable.
Hey guys, welcome to Breaking Beauty,
the podcast all about the best-selling beauty products and the damn good stories behind them. We're your hosts, Carlene Higgins
and Jill Dunn. Welcome back to Breaking Beauty, you guys.
Hi, Jill.
Hi, Carlene.
So excited today.
We are having a pinch me moment, pinching each other right now. And we are interviewing really the person who is at the top of her beauty game right now. And that is none other than Emily Weiss, founder and CEO of Glossier, which she's founded 3 years ago this month.
Mm-hmm. It's their birthday. And this is the most asked about, most requested, most buzzed about and copied brand in the beauty business right now. And what's exciting is they also just launched in Canada.
And we stopped by the pop-up here in Toronto a few weeks ago. And what you just heard in our cold opener, we tried to capture what the excitement level was like at this pop-up. It was on Queen West. Where else would it be? Mm-hmm. And we chatted with a few of them, and it was kind of like being outside of a Taylor Swift concert. Mm-hmm. You know, there was a lot of women. I myself waited in line 45 minutes to just take a peek inside.
Yeah. And I think it really speaks to the emotional connection with this brand, particularly with millennial women and, you know, young Gen Zers. You don't get that with most other brands. You just don't. And here we are talking to Michelle, who went in and checked out the pop-up. And this was her impression after she came out.
I feel like they put a lot of thought into everything that was going on. It kind of felt like a dream a little bit with all like the pink sheer curtains and the mirrors. Yeah.
I'm not going to lie. I think I'm probably twice Michelle's age, but I was not immune to that magic myself. Mm-hmm. I went inside and I purchased Boy Brow and I purchased Cloud Paint. And
what'd you think? What'd you think of the products?
Well, I had not tried either of them, and Boy Brow is their number one bestseller. And I loved it. It's a brow sort of pomade and color and brow groomer all in one. There's four different ones. There's clear, there's blonde, there's brown, there's black. And I have been a fan of Benefit Gimme Brow for many years. And this is a similar kind of thing.
Yeah.
But it has almost like a little bit of a volumizing element. It's almost like a hair product for your brows.
Yeah. I felt like when I used it, it really hooked, like latched on to my hairs and pulled them up.
Yeah.
And in a way, instead of just like brushing over them. So it really did feel like a grooming. I still need to fill in a bit though. I'm not going to abandon my Chanel, you know, palette quite yet. But for these girls with like the lush brows, that this is great. But you also tried the cloud paint, right?
Yes.
Which you let me play with a bit.
Yeah, the cloud paint, there's four colors. It's kind of a gel cream. A little goes a long way.
Yeah.
And it gives this ethereal sort of glow. I think that whole notion is that you're doing that in the back of an Uber as well. Quickly make yourself look alive. And that was what a lot of women were buying that day as well.
Yeah, I like the sheer matte lipstick too. I always talk about how I'm such a big fan of mattes. It's my first time playing with the sheer matte, but I did like it. I kind of like it better than glosses. I find if glosses are too shiny, it like brings out the shine in my nose and other areas of the face.
I've never noticed that.
But yeah, I like that kind of subdued finish. Yeah. I think it was really pretty.
But zooming out just a little bit, Glossier launched, like I mentioned, in October 2014. Think about that for a moment. There's not a magazine you pick up these days that doesn't have Glossier in the beauty section. They only had four products at the time. It was called Phase One, and it was Balm.com, which was sort of an all-over face and lip balm, priming moisturizer, soothing face mist, and skin tint.
Yeah, she coined the whole skin first, makeup second philosophy. But I mean, I think the packaging, you know, speaking of being in magazines and being all over Instagram, obviously the packaging is a huge part of this story. It's just so visually pleasing. It's pink and white. There's like a slight apothecary feel to it. And it's just like something that you want to, you get and you want to take a picture and like post it on your social.
Not to mention she packaged it in these pink bubble envelopes. Yeah. And that was the first. It seems like it's everywhere now, but you know, she was the first one to have that idea. Everything's under $30. And I have the priming moisturizer right here. The one thing I would say about the price points is I do think it's an accurate reflection of the ingredients that are available in this moisturizer. You know, it's, yeah, it's shea
not,
butter.
Yeah, it's not playing with like these big time, like AHAs, glycolic acid.
No,
all that,
it's not
right?
Anti-aging at all. It's just a soothing, priming moisturizer. There's no silicones in it. And it has glycerin in it and a couple of peptides, but they're sort of toward the end of the ingredient list. So she's not reinventing the wheel with ingredients, which is one thing I think people should know about the brand, is like that is reflected in the price points.
Right. Well, she does say like what she sought to do was create these utilitarian products that were kind of back to basics. You know, she didn't want to overdo it on anything. And, you know, to that point, I think this is another whole side to the story that we're going to be talking about today.
There's just so much to say.
I know.
So we're going on here, guys, but there's a lot to get into.
But the whole business model, I mean, you can't not talk about it. She's been like on the cover of Entrepreneur magazine and like Forbes and WWD, like every other beauty brand now is chasing this model, which is this digitally native.
That's my line. Digitally native.
Do it, girl.
You know, I love a jargon. Let me throw the jargon in here. It's digitally native, vertically integrated. See, I can't even say it. Digitally native, vertically integrated brand, which is essentially this content meets commerce model where everything is direct to consumer. There's no bricks and mortar retail necessarily. And so that is what everyone has their eye on Emily for.
Well, also the idea of this storytelling, you know, that they do themselves, which all came out of Into the Gloss. So going backwards a few steps, you know, she started out in magazines. I think that's why she's a pro storyteller visually and just when you hear her talking. And she started out at Vogue and W Magazine. She was interning. She was working in the fashion department. Eventually, she kind of dumped those gigs. And in 2010, she started her own beauty blog, Into the Gloss.
Yeah, there was a bit of overlap where she worked at Vogue. But the Into the Gloss, I love when she says this. I have read her saying before that she was sick of beauty sort of being the ugly stepsister. She wanted it to be front and center, have its own place, meeting place, if you will.
She had contacts. And I mean, I think, you know, putting on her entrepreneurial hat, she saw a white space really.
Yes.
But she was able to land New York's elite and go into their bathrooms and shoot, you know, what was on their top shelf, which ended up kind of going viral. She also didn't know how to use a camera. She picked one up and sort of was self-taught, ended up doing this bright flash that made everything look blurred and beautiful, that kind of Warhol style, which you would then see Coveture pick up a few years
and
later.
Oh my God, every other, you know, outlet out there.
After that, yeah. And she was only 25 at the time.
Yeah. which is pretty crazy to think of.
Yeah. She's a creative thinker, yeah. I think, is the point we're trying to get to here, yeah. and how you can bring that level of creativity into the business space.
Yeah.
And that's what all of these other brands are now backpedaling. How can we get away from these like hyper retouched ads and actually connect with people?
That's right. And disruptor, kind of makes me cringe to use the word because it's so overused. Mm-hmm. But it absolutely applies to her because mm-hmm. what other beauty brand founder is on the cover of Entrepreneur on Forbes.com?
She's also in Vogue this month.
Yeah.
That's all about the fragrance coming though.
Can you imagine? Imagine if you're an intern at Vogue and years later you're a subject of a profile in the magazine that you walked away from.
Yeah. Just give yourself a pat on the back.
That's kind of the dream right there.
Yeah.
But Glossier You, that fragrance is, you know, we didn't really get the scoop on that. Vogue got the scoop, but she says she wants it to smell like your boyfriend's neck after he's been wearing cologne for 8 hours.
Sounds sexy. Honestly, we could go on and on here, but I think people really want to hear from Emily herself. So at this point, we're going to turn it over, starting with where her passion for beauty came from in the first place. Make me feel so fuzzy, wuzzy, wrap me like a mummy, mummy. You can call me
mummy, lovey, even me, my mummy. Funny how we got so lucky. I'm Emily Weiss, and I'm the founder and CEO of Glossier, based in New York City. I guess my earliest product memories are probably of my grandmother's Clinique gift with purchases. I feel like she lived for a gift with purchase, and I benefited from her hauls. And then I think I remember going to Target, or as we like to say, Target, in the States, to make it a little fancier. They had a whole selection of lip smackers in all different flavors. And you remember they used to do those great collaborations with like Coca-Cola and Pepsi. So there were like these like soft drink flavored lip smackers. And then in high school, I think the brand and the products that really had the biggest impact on me was Stila. And it was Stila in its original iteration, because now they've gone through several changes of ownership. But Stila back in the day, around like 2000, I think it was founded in 96 or 98. But in 2000, I was probably 15, and there was a counter, a Stila counter, that was like my church. And I would go worship at the altar of the Stila counter, because what Janine Lobel did, which was really clever, was she understood that beauty is, I think, much more of a psych, like a beauty brand appeals to more of a psychographic than a demographic. So, you know, with Stila, she, I remember, I have the privilege of knowing her, and I remember she very explicitly told me, you know, who doesn't feel like a girl sometimes, you know? You can be a woman of any age, but there's still a girl kind of, you know, deep down. And Stila had the most incredible quality products and such like brilliant color theory. You know, they found it, they had kitten eyeshadow, and they had this really cool way of doing like, what are they called? Like toilet paper roll kind of cartons for all the, like, you know, all the eyeshadows. And it was just so clever. And she had an illustrator drawing all these little drawings, and it was just very playful. And to have a luxury brand that had really high quality products, but was also so irreverent and playful, I found to be really, really inspiring.
Emily was not an A+ student. And you hear this about a lot of really successful entrepreneurs. And here's what she had to say about that.
I remember, you know, when I was in fifth grade, I think it was around maybe 8 or 9 or 10 years old, I created a whole beauty company. And by company, I mean it was like me baking clay jewelry in my mom's oven and like stinking up the house and then selling it at a craft fair in my elementary school and creating all of this branding and collateral around this jewelry company called Clay Creations and More. And God knows what the creation, what the more was. Like, there was no more. It was just Clay Creations. And I just always loved to make things. And so the struggle in high school and in school was really just that I was going a million miles a minute, so interested in so much design and fashion industry, and I just wanted to get out. I was like, why am I here? Why am I in this classroom? Why? And of course, I learned, you know, many things. But I think if I were to think about what has taught me the most, it's been the experiences I've had working. And that can be working as a hostess and the things I learned there about patience and organization and keeping your cool, and hospitality, which is influencing a lot of our offline strategy at Glossier. and also my internships that I had starting at 15 at Ralph Lauren in the city in the design, you know, room through to my first job out of college at W and then Vogue. I think of the world as the classroom, I guess, more so than traditional education.
Okay, reality TV show break. Does anybody out there remember Emily Weiss from her days on The Hills? I'm obsessed with reality shows. I loved The Hills when it was on, big fan. And, you know, when Emily was interning at Teen Vogue, she appeared on 3 episodes.
Of course you went there.
Oh yeah, I did. I'm sorry, Emily, but I had to ask her. You know what? And she was a really good sport about it, and she had a really good sense of humor and some fond memories about it too.
It's incredible the memory that people have. And also these shows are getting syndicated just forever. And The Hills, I mean, a great show, you know. I remember that time, and it was such a, you know, specific time in the world of media, the whole reality. I feel like that was the height of reality TV about fashion, about, you know, working in fashion. Usually it's via tweets. So usually I'll get like watching at Emily W. Weiss on The Hills right now, and it'll be someone from like Australia, and then I'll know that there's a rerun happening. It's interesting because I really learned so much from being at Teen Vogue. I was there for 3 years. It was basically all of my college experience. I was interning at Teen Vogue. And it's incredible what you learn from traditional media, as you both know with your backgrounds, when it comes to storytelling and content creation and being able to create a narrative and an arc and produce things that really entertain people. It was an incredible training ground.
So after interning and then acting as a fashion assistant and a styling assistant, Emily started Into the Gloss in 2010. And she would work from 5 a.m. to 8 a.m. every morning on the blog before she went to work for about a year.
She launched with just one story, and I read that she said she wanted to have 3 stories every week minimum. So as we know, the top shelf was extremely popular, and she'd go into those bathrooms and dig around and find out what they were using. So we asked Emily whose bathroom was the craziest that she ever came upon.
Khloe Kardashian had the most beautiful bathroom, and their glam room is just beyond, if that kind of counts. I think in a way it counts as an extension of your bathroom. And the French actress Léa Seydoux had this incredible apartment in Paris with a bathroom that was overflowing with product. If there is a definition of a beauty junkie, her name would be just right there. And it's interesting because she had told me in the interview prior to me going into her bathroom that she was low maintenance. And it's interesting because I hear this phrase all the time, and it's almost become this thing that's ingrained in us as women to be somewhat ashamed or self-conscious about what we do and why, the extent to what we do, why we do it with when it comes to beauty. Like, you need to look really great, but don't talk about what it took to look this great. And I think one of the things that Into the Gloss did so well was start to break that stigma by saying this is actually a really great way to have more authorship over your life and your routine and be able to share your opinions with other women who could benefit from or benefit slash be entertained slash, you know, learn something new from what you know. And I think Into the Gloss came at a time when there was this pivot from brand or brand appointed expert rules, knowledge, what have you, to the customer, and into this era that we're in now where everyone is her own expert. And because of where social media is at, be it Instagram or YouTube or whatever, reviews on Sephora.com, reviews on Amazon, every woman is her own expert, and she's really controlling which beauty brands, which products win and why.
So
So being editors ourselves, we had to ask, and we were very curious about which Into the Gloss story got the most clicks in the blog's history. And she told us it was, do you remember this?
Yep.
So it's about how to give yourself a Brazilian wax.
Ouch. Ouch.
I can't even imagine attempting that.
Yeah, it's a brave new world. I mean, there's being your own expert, and then there's just being, like, silly. Apparently, just two or three people now run the site. She's obviously stepped back a little bit as she's much more involved in Glossier. I read in Fashion Magazine that the site also stopped selling advertisements about a year ago.
She sees it as a way to communicate that two-way street with her potential Glossier customers and beauty lovers. And I think there's still over 2 million unique visitors per month from around the globe.
Yeah, that's impressive.
And it was obviously the genesis for Glossier. Just ahead, Emily is going to explain how she made the leap from beauty editor to beauty founder.
So I'm 32 now. I think I was 20, I don't know, 3 years ago, late 20s. And the idea came about in around 2013, because that's when I remember I went out into the big bad world of venture capital and started to try and raise money for this crazy idea of a beauty company that listened to its customers and engaged with them. And I just kept thinking, you know, I feel so distant from so many of these companies. I might really appreciate a product from one of these companies, but generally it's not all of their products. Generally it's one or two hero products. Because there's just so much stuff out there. And I also just don't know what these brands stand for, because so many of them are you know, no longer founder-led or just become so commercial or kind of so much in an ivory tower dictating, you know, what to do or what's cool, charging a lot of money for things that maybe perhaps don't need to be that expensive. There were so many observations that I'd had in the years of running the website and in talking to so many women. That's what I did it Into the Gloss. It was like, you know, 3 years of market kind of research. And so the conversation that I wanted to create with Into the Gloss and bringing that conversation around beauty to the forefront really naturally evolved into, I wonder, you know, if it's possible to create this modern beauty company that's incredibly inclusive. And I wonder if you can do that strictly through digital. I wonder if you can, you know, not rely on retailers who would potentially distort your brand message or tell you, dictate what you need to make as a brand, which many of them do, but be able to say, let's write our own rules here. Let's pretend like there were never a beauty brand before. Let's just start from, let's just clean slate here. What do women want? And that is very much how, you know, we've gotten here and how we've built the company. And, you know, we've had 600% growth year over year for 3 years. And majority of customers find out about us from existing customers, not through big splashy marketing campaigns or anything like that, but really from just the integrity of the product and how we do things that women are really excited about it. Our product philosophy, I think, is like pretty simple, which isn't necessarily always the sexiest thing according to beauty brands. A lot of products that crossed my desk when I was an editor, a beauty editor, were very overwrought, lots of bells and whistles, very heavy, lots of claims about, you know, ingredients harvested on mountaintops by fairies and sleds and, you know, unicorns sprinkling dust everywhere. And I didn't really respond to that marketing speak. I am, you know, a busy lady like we all are, who really enjoys when they discover something awesome and want to take care of their skin and play with makeup. Like, it's not that complicated.
There's been so much talk about this brand,
yeah,
and so many young women sharing their personal experiences with these products.
Yeah, what they're liking, what they're not.
Yeah, on Buns and all different kinds of chat forums and in the comments on Into the Gloss. There's a lot written about Emily in entrepreneurial magazines, yeah, on Forbes.com and on the front page of Women's Wear Daily, which, yeah, is that industry bible.
Yeah, there's like just as much ink about the whole business side of things. Both sides, I would say, are equally juicy.
You know, one of the things that I found as a young entrepreneur is that women are reticent to talk about money. It's a little bit of a sort of a thing that I want to help break. And so I've written about our funding on Into the Gloss. There's a whole story up there about, you know, what it took to raise our Series B last year, which was the largest Series B raised by a female CEO in all of 2016. We raised $24 million. And, you know, going back to 2013 when I raised $2 million seed round led by Kirsten Green in San Francisco of 400 Ventures, times were very different. Even though the beauty industry is a $400 trillion global sector, it's a huge industry, venture capitalists didn't really, had never really played there. They weren't really tapping into it, which I find sort of shocking. It's like, it's great business. And the other thing that hadn't happened is anything with Glossier. I mean, I literally had a spreadsheet and a very excited smile. It was just an idea. That's tricky to pitch to people. I needed to really get my ducks in a row. I mean, it's funny because today I joke that next time I have a high-powered meeting, I want to wear like an Armani suit, like tailored, do a whole suit thing. And our president at Glossier, Henry, who came from venture capital, was like, Emily, I don't think you understand. Like, venture capitalists wear hoodie sweatshirts and like Patagonia like fleeces. Like, you do not need to wear a suit. You can literally wear jeans and like your like pajamas. Like, it does not matter. So I didn't do that, but I did need to build, as any entrepreneur does, a very compelling argument for how the industry is changing, what the market size is, really just like why women will care. Why do I believe that women will care and that this will matter to her. And it was a very grueling process convincing people of that. I got a lot of no's that first time. And the second time when we raised our A, I got mostly no's. And then we raised our B, I got like 12 out of 12 yeses, which was a great feeling. But that's not just because of Glossier. That's because of the power of women. I mean, the beauty industry is, I mean, look at who's shopping for beauty. Look at who's driving social media. Look at the majority of users on Instagram and on Facebook are women. Spending power of women has been well proven. So there's a sort of massive democratization of beauty that's happening. I hope in part led by platforms like Into the Gloss and companies like Glossier. And I think the people in charge, even though I would say the customers actually in charge, are starting to realize that. Of course, I was very intimidated, and anytime it's your baby, it's like your kid. It's like if you take your kid to try out for, you know, school or try to get into their preschooler. I don't know. In New York, this happens. Like you have to. I don't have kids yet, but you know, apparently the school application process is bananas. And that's a little bit like how I felt. It was like, you know, please believe in me. And that's always, I think, being vulnerable is always really, really, really hard, but very formative.
So she had a lot of people giving her advice, and I just really wanted to know, how does she cut through that clutter as a new entrepreneur and stick to her vision? Mm-hmm. And so we asked her, looking back, what was some of the worst advice that she received starting this business?
Worst advice? Don't do it. I remember distinctly someone saying with Into the Gloss, why would you do that? A beauty blog? You work at Vogue. Why would you start a beauty blog? So
you didn't listen.
I didn't listen. Glad I didn't listen.
Quite frankly, she could have come out with a luxury niche line of beauty products with like $100 price points, but she didn't do that.
Nobody would have even blinked an eye.
No.
They would have been like happily handing over their money.
Yeah. So just let that like sit for a second. What does that really say? I think it's really key.
I grew up at a time when, which has been all the time, since like the modern day beauty industry has existed, where I was taught to believe that price is synonymous with quality and that price is synonymous with luxury. Meaning if a cream costs $300, surely it must be better. It must be the best than a cream that costs $60. And that cream at $60 must be much better than the cream that costs $30. And what I learned through getting to know the beauty industry is that's all just marketing. Sure, it costs, you know, depending on which materials you're using, which raw ingredients. Of course, you can make your cost of goods quite high, and then you have to think about margins and all of that. But generally speaking, that is much more of just a mindset, mental sort of knee-jerk reaction
from even myself for many years, who wanted the best and so would pay as much as I could pay in order to get the best that was out there. So it's true that Into the Gloss, I think, if you know, because many of the women who we profile are quite successful in their respective industries, they probably have, you know, relatively high household incomes, and they probably can afford to spend, you know, quite a bit of money on beauty products. And if you were to add up any top shelf, it'd probably be in the, you know, upper hundreds of dollars. But that also is just really inaccessible for most women, and I wanted to build a brand that everyone could really enjoy, but that was a luxury brand. So I think what Glossier is doing, and what we were able to do and are going to continue to do, is break down those preconceived notions by creating the best quality things that are pretty affordable. So we're somewhere, you know, above, we're between mass and prestige. We're, I guess, mestige. It's like, you know, a little, probably around the same lines as like a Clinique, maybe a little bit more, probably about the same. And our Priming Moisturizer Rich, for example, is in the low $30 US, and I think is superior than most $300 creams I've ever tried. And certainly the ingredients are comparable. So I think that's really important for us.
It was interesting. She uses utilitarian to mm-hmm. describe her products.
Yeah.
Functional, but beautiful.
Yeah. Well, that's where the real genius lies when it comes to Glossier, if you ask me. I mean, she's delivering high design, good quality at low prices. We're talking like the IKEA sweet spot here. I mean, you could just laugh yourself straight to the bank with this formula.
Right. But even better, because with Glossier, you've got this emotional connection.
Yeah.
Emily calls it connective tissue. It's what links customers to the brand. So mm-hmm. they're really a part of it.
Yeah. Well, probably the biggest example of this connection would be the crowdsourcing of some of their products. That's like a monumental moment in beauty history right there.
Oftentimes, I'll read emails or I'll read DMs or comments that are, hey, can you please make a blush, let's say, and we will just be about to launching a blush. So it's funny. I think we kind of are like psychically connected with, a lot of it is because we're pretty connected and we're, you know, emailing her and asking her a lot of questions on platforms like Into the Gloss. But we're really on the same wavelength. And there are some products that we intune, I don't know what that word is, kind of like a medium, you know, with them, where we just kind of know, like a Boy Brow, for example. And then there are other products like Milky Jelly, where we just are really like having an internal debate ourselves, like, you know, should we make, where we want to make a cleanser, but we're sort of torn between an exfoliating cleanser, something that's, you know, maybe a little bit more for brightening and evening, or do we make a cleanser that's better for taking off makeup and is more gentle? And so we'll say, well, let's extend it to the group, because I do believe our customers are an extension of our team. Like, we're all co-conspirators in this thing. And so that led to Milky Jelly Cleanser with, you know, thousands of comments across several platforms on what should be your dream face wash. So it's really an art and a science. I mean, women have asked us for a Glossier deodorant. They've asked us for Glossier toothpaste. It's interesting. I think when women think of Glossier, they're thinking really of a lifestyle, and they're thinking of their bathroom, at least, if not the world, through kind of Glossier colored glasses. Like, I don't just want my incredible priming moisturizer, but I want you to make what I see as being banal into something quite beautiful, something enjoyable, whether that's a tampon or a toothbrush or a deodorant. I just want to continue to make amazing things that make people really happy.
Well, one of my favorite things to do as a beauty editor, I'm just always reading about who's doing what and sneaking around on buns and things like that. And not too long ago, I noticed Volition mm-hmm. and they crowdsource what their customers are doing mm-hmm. and what they're looking for. And mm-hmm. guess what? Bringing it to market ASAP.
Yeah. Sound familiar? Yeah, Emily was definitely ahead of the game on this one. And by the way, as a sidebar, I love that about you, Jill. You're like the beauty researcher. You could just see her now at 4 a.m. She's just like down this wormhole in her jammies. And she's just like, what? I can't believe this is happening.
I really keep you in the loop, don't I?
Anyway, you know, she talks about the corporate culture and how at Glossier, it's really not about like an us, we work here, and them, the customer. Like, she has always maintained from the beginning that the customer is the employee and vice versa.
Right. And, you know, it's remained a little bit quiet, but you'll notice on Instagram these Glossier ambassadors. Mm-hmm. It's like a referral reward program. Mm-hmm. And when I reviewed the Body Hero mm-hmm. products on my YouTube channel, check mm-hmm. it out, you guys, a lot of the comments were from people who are on this program saying, use my keyword or my name to get 20% off.
Right.
And it's kind of like a newer, cooler, fresher incarnation of Mary Kay or Avon, yeah. or where it was peer-to-peer buying.
Yeah. I wonder what they get. I wonder if they get a discount themselves, or do they get a check?
They probably do get some kind of commission. I mean, we ask Emily a little bit about that. And I mean, they maintain a lot that they don't pay influencers and yes. they don't pay people to place products, which is mm-hmm. very unusual also. Mm-hmm. So this is just a next evolution in how they're changing the game and seeing, hey, people are selling our products word of mouth. Why aren't they getting a kickback for that?
You know, we're really proud and excited about the ecosystem that we're building. We live in an Amazon world. The customer, especially millennial customer and Gen Z, is spending most of her time online, whether that's watching original content programming on Netflix or shopping or looking at social media platforms. And brands that adapt to that channel or are founded on that channel are the only ones that are going to be around. It's interesting because... you know, when I think about Avon, and granted, I wasn't there. I mean, I know Avon's still around and alive and well. But when I think about the sort of Tupperware party model, it's funny because at the time, the best way to communicate with your friends was to, I guess, call them on the phone one-to-one or have them all over all together in a group. Fast forward 2017, you can Instagram story live to hundreds of thousands, millions, 50, however many people discover that live all at once. And that's your living room now. Like, that's how you're connecting with people, is through user-generated content. User-generated content and our customers have been the biggest reason for our success to date. They love the product. We have like a super high repeat rate. People are coming back. They're replenishing. And we are formalizing that in different ways and bringing her closer. I like to think, you know, if you're a woman who just wants to get your primary moisturizer every 2 months, you can just subscribe and doesn't want to hear from us, doesn't want our emails, doesn't want our, you know, Instagram. I don't know why, they're pretty funny, but she can just subscribe and have that auto delivered to her and that's her, the end of her engagement with the brand. And that's fine. It's totally great. I'm happy she likes the product. But we also have a sort of ladder of engagement across different channels all the way up to our reps and creators who are rewarded to create content for us. And those are not, you know, influencers in the sense that they are Kim Kardashians or Kylie's or, you know, even people with hundreds of thousands of followers, but they're very influential in their groups of friends. You know, you might have 150 followers on Instagram, but they're all following you for a reason. They want to see what you care about. So you, by definition, are an influencer to them. And so we really see all of our customers as influencers to varying degrees. And if they want to participate more or the most, I should say, with our brand and create content on our platform, on our channels, we're organizing ways for her to do that and get rewarded.
I wonder what it's actually like to work at Glossier, though.
They did invite us to stop by the showroom in Manhattan, so we will do that.
Maybe we can volunteer to intern.
To do... Oh, yeah, I actually would. I'd probably learn a lot. I know I would learn a lot.
I'll stuff bags. I just want to see what's happening.
I want to see all these mood boards that she talks mm-hmm. about, that they still have the original mood board in their office that Emily had in her apartment when she was dreaming up Glossier. So cool. So I want to see that.
They're expanding really fast. They just celebrated their third birthday. As we said, they now have 120 people on staff, including in their office in Montreal.
And they're expanding into the UK and into France as well. Mm-hmm. And when I chatted with Emily's executive assistant, Morgan Von Steen, mm-hmm. Emily always has posts on her Instagram stories, hashtag the Daily Morgan. Hey, mm-hmm. Morgan. But she basically said that she worked in the same building as Emily when mm-hmm. she was an intern at Fashionista.
Yeah.
And she got an intro to her. And then she just really admired her from afar for a while. And mm-hmm. when they got funding, she was just like, that's it. I got to go work for this girl. Yeah. So she is inspiring legions of customers, Emily is, but also mm-hmm. inspiring a whole new generation of women and in business that mm-hmm. want to, you know, be part of this process and are yeah. excited about it.
I think she said most of her employees are women, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So we asked Emily, what does it take to work at Glossier?
To be honest, I think resumes are... I don't know. I don't really look at them that much. I like to have them in a meeting for context, but I really value and love an in-person meeting. And I love if I can't interview someone, and I interview every single person we hire before we hire them, if I can't do it in person, I always do a FaceTime. I think human-to-human connection in this crazy digital world of ours is super important, as are tangible experiences and things. The most impressive thing I've seen from a candidate, though, some of the things that hit my desk are incredible from, you know, presentations people make and kind of mail in. But I'm always most impressed when someone can tell me what value they think they could add to the business. And the answers can vary widely, but it's usually something that isn't necessarily... It's not like, yes, hire me for this job. I can do this job. It's like, but tell me why. Like, let's really get into this. Like, what are you going to bring to this? And I think when someone shows that they can not only just do the job on paper, because that changes so fast, like we're growing like crazy. So you're not going to be doing the same thing that you came in to do in, you know, a couple months. But it's when they can really show that they're going to be a positive impact on our culture mm-hmm. that I really sit up and take notice. You're going to build Glossier's way of doing things above and beyond just doing your job.
We know a lot about Glossier right now, don't we, Carlene?
Yeah, we could write the encyclopedia entry. But I think people want to know about Emily too, right? The creator.
And yeah, I thought she was really wonderful when we met her.
Yeah, she was gorgeous. I will admit, I was a little bit intimidated. I kind of had that feeling in my belly, like when I interview a celebrity, like, oh, I'm just intimidated because she's such a pretty person. Like, honestly, comes in looking like an actress, you know, just like the perfect 501s. You're like, where'd you get those? Like camel coat, Victorian blouse, sneakers. And like her hair is just so silky.
Yeah.
You know? And so I just kind of like.
Perfect skin as well.
Oh, yeah. So, and then we're in this Polaroid picture together and she's in the middle with her arms draped around us, just like so casual. And I'm like half a foot away.
No, I think it's a cute photo.
Yeah.
But it's funny you mentioned that because we asked Emily what the one thing is that a lot of people don't know about her. And, you know, it kind of stumped her. So
yeah.
In that case, we asked Morgan, who was in the room with her, and got her to weigh in.
I think you come off a lot more serious than you actually are. Because, like, I think you're a lot, like, goofier, sillier than I think people expect, more than I expected.
I'm kind of, what you see is what you get. Like, me on Instagram is kind of the same as me in real life, is the same as me at work. I'm mad silly. It's actually true. I'm also, I think people don't realize that I'm actually really nerdy.
I get the cool girl thing. I mean, she does look like a model.
Mm-hmm.
She, though, in person is very, very approachable.
Yeah, she sat down with us. She's like, how long have you guys been doing this? You know, she was great. And I think to that point, I think people do want to know more about her and also how she looks so great. So yeah. We did ask her some questions about what her self-care routine is like.
I recently took up Vedic meditation. So I try meditate at least once a day for 20 minutes in the morning when I wake up and hopefully 20 minutes in the afternoon, but that one's a lot harder. I also love baths. I take a bath almost every night, especially in the winter or like when it's not hot out. I usually do it with either Epsom salt and half a box of Arm & Hammer baking soda Or I'll do Himalayan sea salt that I buy in bulk. I just bought a 55-pound delivery of Himalayan sea salt.
We also asked her about her favorite beauty hacks.
One that I recently have taken up is spraying my beauty blender with rose water mist, with soothing face mist, instead of just usually like running it under the sink. It just smells wonderful. Another beauty hack with Glossier products. I blend together Puff and Beam of Cloud Paint to make my own custom blush color.
I joke that this brand is like a cult, but really, it's like a giant girls club. It's where people are trading these types of tips and, you know, what they're loving. And I think that's really one of the points that Emily wanted to make with Glossier is like you in the past would go into a drugstore, let's say, pick up a mascara, buy it. You have no idea who the founder is, where it's from, what it's about, really.
And yeah, no one's ever like, let me tell you about Maybelline. Yeah. She was a real character.
Yeah, Mabel. You know? Until our podcast came along. That's actually why we created it. We wanted to bring a human face and, you know, tell some of these stories outside of just the products. And I think that's what she's done. You know, she's given Glossier a soul.
And on that note, to really honor that idea, we are going to close it out with a few questions from her biggest fans.
What it's like to be a girl in the makeup industry. Normally it's like a lot of guys dominated in the CEO kind of position.
Well, it's interesting. I mean, L'Oreal has a male CEO, Estee Lauder has a male CEO, but the majority of beauty brands that those companies own are founded by women. Mm-hmm. So generally the woman is the CEO for, you know, it seems like if I just did a quick glance, the woman is the CEO for a while. And maybe once the company gets bought or sold or enough time goes by, somehow, you know, the female founders end up going away. I don't have any plans to go away anytime soon. So it feels great. I mean, I love being a girl. I love being a woman. Yeah, it feels great.
Where do you see Glossier in 10 years?
I see Glossier in 10 years as being a truly global beauty company. Not just a beauty brand, not a niche brand, not just a U.S. brand, but I really see it being that a 13-year-old girl in the Middle East can have a G sweatshirt and share that connection with a 70-year-old woman in Silicon Valley who's wearing the same sweatshirt. I see it being this truly global connective tissue that powers women all around the world.
Thanks for tuning in. Visit breakingbeauty.ca to sign up for our newsletter, and every episode will be delivered direct to your inbox so you won't miss a single thing.
And be sure to subscribe to us. There's Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, and SoundCloud, wherever you get your podcast fix.
And if you're up for it, show your love by writing a review in iTunes.